IBM Research. Sergei did his PhD at the Landau Institute of Theoretical Physics in Moscow, finishing in 2003. Then he was a postdoc in John Preskill's group at Caltech till 2005. Then he took a postdoc at IBM, and then subsequent to that became a member of the research staff at IBM. Today he's going to speak on topological quantum order and quantum error correcting codes.
Okay. Thank you very much for So the problems that I'm going to discuss today lie on the interface between these two fields. On one side we have spin Hamiltonians and topological quantum order. And on the other side, we have a theory of quantum error correcting codes. And of course, these two fields are not exactly the same. On this side, we are trying to classify possible phases of matter and understand their properties. And on the other side, we are studying ways of transmitting quantum information through a noisy communication channel. But as you can see from this table, there is still significant overlap between these fields. For example, if we consider a code space of a quantum code, these local check operators, it's actually the same as considering ground state of some spin Hamiltonian, these local interactions. Sometimes we can relate error correcting threshold of certain codes to phase transition points in certain spin Hamiltonians. So these two fields share a lot of problems, and it is natural to ask whether we can use techniques and ideas developed in one of these fields to solve some open problems posed in the other field. Today I'm going to consider three such problems. The first problem concerns stability of the spectral gap of spin Hamiltonians under local perturbations. Typically, this spectral gap of a spin Hamiltonian is obviously important property because it determines the low temperature physics of a system. And usually experimentalists can control parameters of a Hamiltonian only with some finite precision. It is important to understand how sensitive is a spectral gap to small errors in implementations. The second problem concerns implementations of spin Hamiltonians with topological order, using so-called perturbation gadgets. The purpose of these perturbation gadgets is to engineer Hamiltonians that have many body interactions using simple Hamiltonians that have only two body interactions. The third problem is about quantum codes. With local check operators on a two-dimensional lattice, and I will discuss how the geometric locality leads to non-trivial trade-offs between parameters of quantum codes. So this is the outline of the talk. So let me begin with a few general words about topological quantum order. This term was originally introduced around 20 years ago by Shaogang Wen. Then people tried to understand exotic phases of matter that arise in the fractional quantum Hall effect. Unfortunately, there is no one-line definition of what is topological order. First of all, it is a collective property of some two-dimensional spin systems or electron liquids. it has three main signatures. This should have a constant energy gap above the ground state, so all excitations are gapped, and correlation functions must decay exponentially with the distance. Secondly, the ground state of the system must be degenerate, and this degeneracy should depend on, should be sensitive to the topology of the underlying surface. And it also must be robust against sufficiently weak perturbations. The final property is that excitations above the ground state must be anions. So these are quasi-particles that are transformed according to non-trivial representations of the Braid group. So if you take two anions and you move one of them around the other, you can get some non-trivial phase factor. Or sometimes you you can even get some non-trivial unitary transformation. Yes?
That definition, there's topological order only in two spatial dimensions because there's no braiding above two dimensions. Is there a generalization of the definition that will work?
Yes, actually, this definition only applies to two dimensions, but a topological order is more general, so there are ways to define it in arbitrary special dimension. I will touch on that later. So from the mathematical perspective, there are several ways from which you can view the topological order. So if you like quantum field theory, then you can view topological order as Chern-Simons gauge theory in 2 plus 1 space-time. In addition, the behavior of anion wave functions under braiding of anions can be studied using correlation functions of conformal field theory. If you are a topologist, you can view topological order as theory of topological invariants of nodes and links, such as the Jones polynomial. Or more generally, these are invariants of free manifolds. So in principle, a formal definition of topological order can be given using the language of this unitary modular categories. But this language is very abstract, and I will not need it today. For the purposes of my talk, the most adequate description of topological order is in terms of quantum error-correcting folds. Okay. The first problem that I'm going to study concerns stability of the spectral gap. Let me try to explain what is the goal. We are trying to find some ideal model, this Hamiltonian H0, that describes a lattice of interacting spins. This ideal Hamiltonian must have these properties. First, we want to have a degenerate ground state. Secondly, this ground state must be separated from excited states by constant energy gap. Most importantly, we want these properties to hold even in the presence of sufficiently weak generic perturbation. By sufficiently weak, I mean that we want to have some constant stability radius independent of the lattice size, such that if the strength of the perturbation is smaller than this radius, then the gap above the ground state remains constant, and degeneracy of the ground state is lifted, but only by exponentially small amount. So as you increase the lattice size, for all practical purposes, you can consider the degeneracy to be exact. the first observation that I want to make is that this gap stability is impossible for classical spin systems. For example, suppose we consider a system of Ising spins, and these spins occupied vertices of some graph, and there are spin-spin interactions associated with edges of the graph. Suppose we have chosen these interactions such that we have two degenerate ground states, say psi and psi prime. Each of these states is just a configuration of classical spins. So if these states are globally distinct, there should be some place where these two states are. Well, these two states should assign different values to at least one spin. So they are locally distinct. And now it is clear that we can always choose our perturbation that leaves the ground state degeneracy. We just find the place where the two states are different, and then we apply a local magnetic field to this spin. Then the energy of this state will go up, and the energy of this state will go down. So the gap stability is not possible in the classical world. One amazing feature of the quantum mechanics is that we may have entangled quantum states. And entangled quantum states may be globally distinct, but locally indistinguishable. So this is the simplest example when we have just two qubits and we consider two orthogonal Bell states. So if you look only on one qubit, you will see just maximally mixed state. So you will not distinguish between these states. however, this example is not very interesting because we can choose some new ground states, say linear combinations of these states, and these new ground states will be locally distinguishable. So it leads me to this topic of quantum error correcting codes. Let's first consider this slightly more complicated example. Suppose these are my ground states. We have a system of just four qubits. you can easily check that all linear combinations of these two states are locally indistinguishable. So if you are allowed to look only at single qubits, you would not be able to distinguish different linear combinations from each other. So this is an example of what we called a quantum court. This particular quantum court is not very interesting because if we are allowed to look at pairs of qubits, then we of course be able to distinguish these two states. For example, if you look on the parity of the second and the third bit, then for state psi, the parity is 0, and for state psi prime, the parity is 1. So we can distinguish them. More generally, we say that a linear subspace L is a quantum court with distance d. Different quantum states in this subspace cannot be distinguished by looking on d or less qubits. If you take any operator O that acts on less than d qubits, this operator has the same expectation value on any states in this subspace. what is our next goal is to construct a family of quantum codes that are defined on a lattice of qubits, for which the distance can grow with the lattice size. Yes?
What code? Is there something you can encode with this? Or?
Yes, so, okay, so the idea is that if you give me such a code, I can store quantum information by inside this linear subspace. And it will be difficult for the environment to destroy this information if assuming that the environment can only apply local operators. the simplest family of such codes are so-called toric codes. These codes were introduced by Kitaev around 97. suppose we have a real dimensional lattice, and it has periodic boundary conditions, and I assume that qubits live on the limbs of the lattice. The simplest, let me first explain how to construct a toric chord state, and later I will explain how to construct this chord in Hamiltonian. The simplest description of this toric chord state is in terms of cycles. A cycle is a set of links. C is called a cycle if every site has a given number of incident links from C. For example, this picture represents a cycle. Because of periodic boundary conditions, this is just the part of this cycle. To define the toric chord state, we must follow three simple rules. First, we choose arbitrary cycle C. We look for all qubits that belong to this cycle and set them to zero. We set all the remaining qubits to we set all qubits that belong to this cycle to one, and we set all the remaining qubits to zero.
I'm confused. You're saying that every site has an even number of links
which
touch C?
Every site has even number of links that belong to C.
That belong to C or that touch C?
That belong to C.
So I'm confused. Every site on C?
Every site on the lattice.
Okay, we'll point to one that doesn't touch C. Why does that have an even number of links?
Oh. Because it's zero.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
So for the square lattice, even zero, two, or four.
Or four.
And so you can also think about the cycle as just a union of closed loops. So to each cycle, we can associate this quantum state, which is a tensor product of zeros and ones. We take the uniform superposition of these cycle states over all possible cycles on the lattice. What we get is the toric chord state. Now we can specify this toric chord state using local constraints, what we call star operators and plaquette operators. The purpose of star operators is to penalize states that violate the cycle condition. This is a product of sigma z operators over four links incident to some site. These operators make sure that the number of links incident to the site is even. The purpose of plaquette operators is to make sure that all cycles appear in the ground state with equal amplitudes. This plaquette operator is a product of Pauli sigma x over the boundary of plaquette. It just creates an elementary closed loop associated with the plaquette. And the toric-cord Hamiltonian is just the sum of minus sum of all stars and all plaquettes. one can easily check that all star and all plaquette operators commute with each other. So this this Hamiltonian is exactly solvable. one can also easily check that ground states of this Hamiltonian that minimize every star and every plaquette operators are just uniform superposition of cycles as we want.
What are you going to?
Yeah, actually, a very small and one ground state, but I will explain it on the next slide. In fact, we can construct a complete basis of eigenvectors by choosing the different eigenvalues for this star and plaquette operators. And it can be shown that these excitations are actually anions. But I will skip these details. Okay, so now it's important to remember that our lattice is drawn on topologically non-trivial surface, which is the torus. And if you consider a set of all possible cycles on a torus, they can be organized into equivalence classes, what we call homological classes. We say that two cycles are homologically equivalent if they differ by a linear combination of contractible loops. Linear combinations are performed over binary field. For example, on this picture, cycles C1, C2, and C3 are all homologically equivalent to each other. And in fact, they are homologically trivial. However, cycle C4 is not homologically trivial because it contains odd number of non-contractible loops. So it's not hard to check that the ground state of the toric-cord Hamiltonian is degenerate, and one can choose orthogonal ground states as uniform superpositions of all cycles with a fixed homological class. Say, if you take trivial homological class, we will get the first ground state. Then we take homological class with one vertical loop, will be the second ground state, and so on. So for the torus, the ground state is fourfold degenerate. The amazing property of this toric-cord model is that these distinct ground states cannot be distinguished locally. This is because homological class of a cycle is a global property, and you cannot determine it by looking only on some small small piece of a cycle. In fact, we know that the distance of this cord is proportional to the size of the lattice. So increasing the lattice, we will get better and better codes. Oh, it's just a code has distance d if you cannot distinguish different ground states by looking on less than d qubits. So it just says that you have to look on roughly l qubits to determine what is homological class. Another important concept that I want to mention is logical operators. So logical operators can be used to implement some non-trivial transformation on the ground state. You can think about them as a logical operator acting on encoded qubits. If you want to encode just a single qubit, we will consider two logical operators, logical X and logical Z. And logical X is just product of Pauli X's along some non-contractible loop on the lattice. And as for the logical Z, it's a product of Pauli Z over some non-contractible loop drawn on the dual lattice. So you can check that these two operators anti-commute with each other, and they commute with every term in the Hamiltonian. So these stoic chords can be easily generalized to higher special dimensions. So I have explained what is a two-dimensional toric chord. And to define three-dimensional toric chord, we consider 3D cubic lattice and replace qubits on plaquettes of the lattice. And analogs of star operators are link operators. So for every link, we can take a product of Pauli Z over the four plaquettes that contain this link. And analog of plaquette operators are cube operators. So we take a product of Pauli X over six plaquettes forming the boundary of a cube. Yes?
Here is a qubit associated to each face?
Yes. Qubits live on faces.
Okay, and the first one qubits live on the edges?
Yes. And similarly, you can define the story codes on four dimensional lattice. Okay, and for these three-dimensional toric chords, we can also choose logical operators on the encoded qubits. But now there is a difference. So the logical Z operators still have a geometry of a string, but logical X operators now has geometry of a membrane. So it's two-dimensional homologically non-trivial cycle on a lattice. And also one can easily compute the distance of this high-dimensional toric chords. And the distance is determined by the minimum length of a homologically non-trivial loop on the lattice, or the minimum area of a homologically non-trivial closed surface. So it's for three-dimensional chords, the distance still grows linearly with the lattice sides, but for four dimensions, it grows as L squared. And also let me mention this interesting fact that if you replace regular cubic lattice by more complicated lattices embedded into four-dimensional Riemann manifolds, then the distance of a chord can grow actually faster than L squared. This is the result by Friedman and Mayer. So these toric chord Hamiltonians that I showed you are ideal model. Ideal models, and in real life, we can only obtain some reasonably good approximation to these models. For instance, we should consider some external magnetic fields or some unwanted interactions between spins, defects of the lattice, and so on. And the important question is whether this properties of the ideal toric chords also hold in the presence of weak perturbations. more generally, we also have to consider effect of thermal fluctuations. And So this table summarizes what we know about stability of these pluripods. So in the case of zero temperature, we just consider stability in the presence of weak perturbations. And we can show that the pluripods are stable regardless of the spatial dimension. But if you consider stability under thermal fluctuations, then situation is different. So the four-dimensional pluripod is stable, but in dimension smaller than four, topological order is destroyed at any non-zero temperature. Yes?
I don't think so.
I think this four-dimensional model is just of theoretical interest. I have not explained what exactly means stability of topological order at non-zero temperature, and the definition is rather technical, but the idea is to generalize this definition of a quantum error correcting code such that it applies not only to the ground state of a system but also to a thermal deep state. Okay. Now let me talk about stability at the zero temperature. Suppose we will use naive perturbation theory and analyze what happens to the, say, two-dimensional pluripod if we add a small external magnetic field. If magnetic field is zero, we have a four-fold degenerate ground state, then we have constant energy gap, and we have first excited states in which we can create a pair of excitations on the lattice. This first excited state has a huge degeneracy because there is a lot of ways to choose a pair of sides to excite or a pair of plaquettes to excite. And then we have second excited states and so on. If magnetic field is non-zero, then ground state is no longer degenerate. But if you use naive perturbation theory to compute the energy splitting, then we will see that correction to the ground state energy is the same for all ground states. This is precisely because different ground states are locally distinguishable. And because our perturbation is a sum of local operators, it cannot see any difference between ground states. In fact, the first non-trivial correction to this energy splitting appears in a very high order of perturbation theory, which is of order L, the lattice size. So we expect that the energy splitting is exponentially small in the lattice size. As for excited states, we should expect that the energy splitting appears already in the first order of perturbation theory, because a local perturbation can move excitation from one location to adjacent location. These predictions of the naive perturbation theory have been partially confirmed in several special cases. The perturbation have certain special symmetry, and we can apply some non-perturbative analysis. For example, if you have just a magnetic field along the z-axis or magnetic field along y-axis, some progress has been recently made by Click in the case of generic perturbations, but this result only applies to non-degenerate ground states.
The question: why did it need to be confirmed? It seemed like the argument you gave was pretty conclusive in itself.
Oh, okay.
In perturbation theory, you won't get
So this argument certainly is conclusive for sufficiently small perturbation strength. But we are interested in the regime when perturbation strength is a constant independent of the lattice size. And in this regime, the perturbation series is typically divergent, so we cannot apply this rigorously. And our contribution is roughly the following. We can state two conditions under which we can rigorously prove stability of the spectral gap. And so the first condition says that the ground state of the ideal model must be a quantum chord with macroscopic distance. So the distance should grow with the lattice size. And the second condition is a little bit more technical. It says that global ground states must be consistent with the local ground states. I will explain it a little bit later. And our results apply to a much more general class of Hamiltonians, not only to the toric-chord states, Hamiltonians. And what we have in mind is some, say, two-dimensional lattice. It could be a high-dimensional lattice. And each side of this lattice is occupied by a quantum particle with a constant dimension, say, a qubit or a qutrit or something like that. And we assume that our ideal model is a sum of local interactions. And each of these interactions acts on some cluster of particles B. And I assume that we have only clusters of size 2 by 2. But this restriction is not serious because we could always consider a coarse-grained lattice. Okay, so there will be only two serious restrictions. Firstly, first we require that every interaction is a projector. And secondly, we require that these projectors must pairwise commute. And finally, we require that ground states of this Hamiltonian must minimize every term in the Hamiltonians. So the ground states are zero eigenvectors of every projector. And so if you don't like equations, you can just rephrase it by saying that we have specially local interactions. The Hamiltonian is frustration-free and term-wise commuting. But we will also need two extra conditions that somehow capture topological order. And Hamiltonians composed of commuting projectors have been extensively studied because they provide many interesting models of topological order. And so these are some well-known examples, toric codes and analogous surface codes, topological color codes, quantum double models, and Levin-Wen string net models. Now, so what kind of perturbations we consider? We assume that a perturbation is also a sum of local interactions, but these interactions involve arbitrarily large clusters of particles. And we assume that the magnitude of interactions decay exponentially with the size of a cluster. So all that we need to know about the perturbation is encoded by these two parameters. J is interaction strength. It tells us how strong is perturbation. And mu is decay rate. It tells us how fast interactions decay. To introduce these topological order conditions, let me make a couple of more definitions. So So we will have this global ground subspace. I call it P. And it is spanned by ground states of the entire Hamiltonian. So these are states that, are annihilated by every projector. And for any region M, we can also define local ground state, local ground subspace. And local ground states must be annihilated only by those projectors that are contained inside this region. So we don't worry about projectors outside or projectors that cross the boundary. And I call this local ground subspace P sub M. And so these are the two conditions that are sufficient for stability. As I said, the first condition just says that global ground subspace must be a quantum cord with macroscopic distance. So the distance should grow as some positive power of the largest size. And second condition is consistency between global and local ground states. So it says that if we take some, say, square region of the lattice M, and let's consider slightly smaller region A, that includes the interior of M, then the condition says that global ground states and local ground states computed for M should not be distinguishable inside this smaller region A. So an observer that has access only to region A cannot distinguish local and global ground states. And this property should hold for all regions M up to size L to the alpha. So this is just a summary of all assumptions that we made. Ideal model should be specially local, frustration-free, term-wise commuting, and it must obey these conditions, macroscopic distance and consistency between local and global ground states. And the perturbation is arbitrary perturbation with exponentially decaying interactions. And so this is our main result. Roughly speaking, it says that this picture that arises from naive perturbation theory is correct. Well, at least it's correct under these assumptions. So we can prove that there is a constant threshold value of interaction strength or stability radius such that below this threshold, the spectrum of the perturbed model is contained in the union of these intervals. So maybe I will show it here. You can consider these intervals as energy bands, and each energy band originates from some eigenvalue of the ideal model. Recall that these eigenvalues are just integers. And the energy band originating from the ground state has exponentially small width. Well, it's not actually, it's a so-called stretched exponential, not pure exponential. Energy bands originating from K eigenvalue has widths proportional to K. Higher energy bands have larger widths. And then it is just a simple algebra. You can check that there is indeed a constant threshold value of J below which these energy bands are separated from each other by constant energy gaps. How much time do I have?
We have another 10 minutes of regular time.
Oh, okay. Let me just try to mention one interesting application of this stability theorem. These story box Hamiltonians that I showed you are not very realistic because they involve multi-spin interactions. say, two-dimensional toric-quark Hamiltonian has four-spin interactions. Most spin Hamiltonians that occur in nature have only two-spin interactions. The question is whether we can find models of topological order that include only two-spin interactions. What we can show using our theorem is that if we take some model of topological order, say toric-quark Hamiltonian, we can connect it by adiabatic path without closing the gap to some Hamiltonian that includes only two-spin interactions. Of course, this new Hamiltonian has completely different ground state than the original Hamiltonian, but because the spectral gap remains constant along this path, we can say that the final and initial Hamiltonians belong to the same phase. This simplified Hamiltonian represents the same topological phase as the original one. I think I don't have much time, so let me just. Sorry. Let me just finish by mentioning some open problems. The first interesting problem is how to extend our stability theorem to more general Hamiltonians. We are especially interested in Hamiltonians that are frustration-free, but not necessarily commuting. Our techniques can actually be used to make some progress along these lines. We can show that for these more general Hamiltonians, it only suffices to prove stability for perturbations that preserve the ground state or preserve the ground state subspace. Second interesting question concerns upper bounds on the distance of three-dimensional quantum codes. Say, if we consider a lattice of linear size L, then the distance of the best known code grows as L to the three halves. The best upper bound on the distance that we have is L squared. So there is a gap between best known lower and upper bound. Okay, something is doubled here. Another interesting question concerns stability of topological phases in three dimensions. We know that a three-dimensional toric chord is not stable at non-zero temperature, but maybe it may happen that there are some other three-dimensional models with topological order that are stable. Finally, all these stability results apply only to the case when we either have non-zero temperature but no perturbation, or we have a perturbation but we have zero temperature. We don't know how to prove stability in a more general case when we consider a perturbed Hamiltonian at non-zero temperature. So thank you for attention.
Questions? So the last thing you said was that you could take your topological order Hamiltonian and have a path that where the gap didn't close to another Hamiltonian at a two-body interaction.
Oh, yes.
But does it follow that this two-body interaction has topological order in the sense of local perturbation, having a degenerate ground space where you can't tell the difference in local perturbations?
It has degenerate ground state up to exponentially small corrections.
Okay, but Does that mean it's topological order? I mean, topological order is usually a stronger statement than that, right?
We know that it has almost a degenerate ground state and it has constant energy gap above the ground state. I'm not sure that we can prove that this degeneracy is stable against perturbations. Because this new Hamiltonian is not frustration free and it is not commuting. So I'm not sure that our theorem applies up to this case.
I have a related question. So, it's just you say that there should be some other Hamiltonian with just two body interaction, that it at least has this degenerate ground state, even if you're not sure if it's stable. But, so, can you say explicitly what it is? I mean, there aren't that many two body interactions, are there?
So you want to see some explicit example of a topologically ordered model with two-body interactions?
Yeah, the kind of thing that's implied by your radio bedding, under your radio bedding.
Well, very, very, very simple model proposed by Kitaev. It's called a honeycomb model.
Because these are presumably more realistic, is there, in some sense.
So maybe I can just say it, but let's consider a hexagonal lattice, and we have qubits living at sides of the lattice, and the Hamiltonian involves only nearest neighbor interactions between qubits. Mm-hmm. And we need three types of interactions. Like sigma x, sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z, sigma z.
You mean certain nearest neighbors are sigma x, sigma x, and other ones are sigma y, sigma y? Is it homogeneous? Or?
Yes, it is homogeneous. Say, if you consider just a single hexagon, then we should put, say, sigma x, sigma x interaction for between this qubit and this qubit, sigma y interaction between this qubit and this qubit, and sigma z between these qubits. And then we just extend this by translational invariance to the rest of the lattice.
So people have not studied stability for this particular?
Actually, this particular model can be exactly solved by making it to free fermions. So we don't need this general theorems for this particular case.
And so what's the answer then? Is it stable or unstable?
This model has three parameters, so this is the strength of XX interactions, this is the strength of YY interactions, and this is the strength of ZZ interactions. And if you consider the phase diagram in the space of these couplings, say this point is 1, 0, 0, this is 0, 1, 0, and this is 0, 0, 1. Then the phase diagram looks like this. So we have topologically ordered phases in the corners of this triangle. So say if we pick this point, we will have a degenerate ground state, we will have constant energy gap, and we will have topological order. But these phases are gapless. So there is no topological order in this phase.
So if you go into one of the phases where there is topological order, then will it be stable among against local perturbations? Or? Thermal, I guess you don't know, right?
Mm. though I'm not sure that we can say this because this model is not frustration free, and so our theorem does not apply.
Maybe, next question.
Yeah, so first, this mapping from many body interaction to two body, is it using the perturbative gadgets or is it another?
Yes, it uses perturbative gadgets.
But you said it's gap or another way. My impression is that perturbative gadgets is not always gap.
We used perturbative gadgets that we have proposed in this paper. It's essentially the same construction which was used in the literature before us, but we derive the effective flow energy of Hamiltonian using a unitary transformation.
And
this is gap. Yes, we use the fact that this unitary transformation preserves the spectrum.
And another question is that you mentioned at the end that you want to generalize this to frustration free but non-commuting Hamiltonian. So for all the models we know, like StreamNet or Oracle on level bit, they are all commuting Hamiltonians, right? So what do you have in mind for kind of things? So in particular, is quantum fault
all our results apply to spin Hamiltonians, so I'm not sure about quantum. But one model that we had in mind is the one-dimensional Heisenberg chain for spin 1. It is not frustration-free, but we can represent it as a perturbation of the HLT model, which is frustration-free.
Yeah. But that's not the topological order you're talking about here, right?
It has a trivial topological order,
yeah.
So it's a special case of...
But the bond state is not locally indistinguishable because the boundaries...
Yes, you're right. But if you consider a ring, then we have a non-degenerate ground state.
I mean, that's just one-dimensional.
One-dimensional.
Yeah.
And they want to prove gap stability for this one-dimensional chain.
Yeah, that's actually what I thought about. So it actually says that for the Shelgren would to call a symmetry protected topological order, actually there is stability even if you somehow break the symmetry, right? Even if you don't have, because Hadamard is there because you have rotational symmetry or something. But if you prove that the gap is stable against any local perturbation, so actually it doesn't require the symmetry to protect the gap. So it's not like like the IC model, you break the Z2 symmetry, you don't have the phase angle. Is that your idea?
In this example, we have non-degenerate ground state, so it's easy to imagine that the gap is protected even in the absence of any symmetry. But maybe we can discuss it after the talk.
Yeah, well, you have to go from an expert to a non-expert again.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned at the beginning the condition that topological order is associated with anions. And then you didn't mention that again. What is the role that condition plays in all this analysis?
Actually, in our proof, this condition does not play any role at all. I think this is very good because for more general models of topological order, we don't necessarily have anions, say, in three dimensions or four dimensions. But still, we can prove stability of the gap using our techniques.
But then maybe it's not a part of the definition. Why is it a part of the definition in two dimensions? If it doesn't play a role. Then there's something more general that implies in two dimensions that there are anions. Something like that.
In two dimensions, we don't actually we don't know any examples of topological order without anions.
That might just be an accident of Chern-Simon theory being chiral or something like that. I mean, are the higher dimensional examples chiral?
I don't think that even in two dimensions you let's see. But what exactly do you mean by chirality?
I don't know. I'm just telling you that could be completely off. In which case, I apologize. My understanding of anions in two dimensions is tied to the existence of the Chern-Simon action, and the coupling of the Chern-Simon action has to do with the anion charge.
I'm not sure what to say. If you take two-dimensional toric chord, I'm not sure what it corresponds to the Chern-Simon's theory. I think that corresponds to just ordinary gauge theory in which symmetry is spontaneously broken to C2.
Okay.
Do we have any more questions about that?
I have a couple of questions. One is sort of theoretical, one is practical. The theoretical one is, can you give some idea of how the proof is actually done? And the practical one is, you mentioned about, it's known that these kind of two-dimensional toric chord and so on are not stable against thermal perturbation. So if you took realistic kind of, I don't know, electron volt, vice couplings between neighboring spins, what temperature would you have to go to disrupt this topological order?
Can I start from the second question? So if you consider any non-zero temperature, then there is a finite density of excitations in your system. The topological order is destroyed as long as you have more than one excitation. So it means that for sufficiently large system size, you will lose topological order at any non-zero temperature. Yes, I think the critical temperature grows like 1 over logarithm of system size or something like that. I'm not sure that I can explain how our proof goes in just a few minutes. Oh, okay.